Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is brought to you by Kempower, the reliable, quick, and scalable EV charging solutions for everyone and everywhere. And StarCharge, the largest EV charging manufacturer in the world, and is also a provider of residential and commercial battery storage. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm your host, Francie. Welcome to our corner of the internet where we get nerdy with EV stuff. And I gotta say, today's episode is no exception. I'm standing right now as I record this, and I might have to sit later because Kyle has told me that this deep dive into the Porsche Taycan everything might take a while. So if you're into that, definitely strap in, stand up or sit down, however you find yourself comfortable. And let's go. Kyle, welcome back to the podcast. How's it going?
Thank you. Going well. This is a really cool, exciting episode that I'm able to share with everyone. And it's not for everyone. This is for the EV hardcore nerds. If you are just a general interested person in cars, you won't like this. This is nerd level 9000 stuff.
Great disclaimer. So feel free to check out one of our other episodes if this isn't your stuff. We don't always get this nerdy, but there's a lot of us who do like to know the intricacies of these EVs and the technologies. And this is a pretty impressive electric vehicle on the market. Of course, it is a premium offering, so they're able to offer premium aspects. Kyle, where should we start?
Well, we've covered the new Porsche Taycan pretty thoroughly. It is on the J1 platform. The pre-facelift car is J1.1. This is J1.2 or J12. It's also known as the PA internally for any facelift version. I've range tested the car, not an official out of spec range test, but I've done a hypermile test, 465 miles on a single charge on the new Taycan. I've charged it peak of 335 kilowatts. It comes under 300 kilowatts at 65%. Just rips the charging performance. It's amazing. So it's got the range, it's got charging, it's got a bigger battery than before. It's got new motors. It's more efficient. It's actually even weighs less than before, which is crazy, with a much larger battery.
Wow.
And I think, you know, anyone watching this podcast probably has seen some of our other Taycan videos. We've done countless things with that car, and I've had the chance to go and film the prototype in a studio in Vysok. I've had a chance to bring it to the development center and meet with the engineers and charge it at the development center. I then had it in California for two different range and efficiency tests and the charging. I've thoroughly covered the car until you see what I'm about to tell you today, because now what I have is sort of the internal technology briefing, 100-page presentation that I'm going to be sharing with everyone. It's a little bit. Some of the slides were presented to me already when I went to film the car in studio. Some of them are new information. I can't visually share the slides. This is going to be a very auditory podcast. We will try and put some B-roll in this just to make it somewhat interesting. But this is one where I hope the Porsche Forum takes notes and logs everything, because I'm not actually able to copy or reprint or reproduce any bit of this presentation, but I do have approval from the Porsche guys to read you everything.
Okay, so you can share all of the juicy details, just not share the how you got them exactly or how you're reading.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a shame because there's just amazing overlays. And actually, some of the slides from this presentation have already been leaked by someone else, not by us, but on the Porsche forums. Not every slide, but maybe someone can put together a thread with the leaked stuff. I'm just not able to share them. I am able to say, though, I have seen some of these slides leaked online somehow.
So I'm just a little curious. You're able to share all the information that you see, but you're not able to share the visuals. Why? What is the information in there that they don't want to be public?
I really don't know, to be honest. I don't have a reason. I was just told no reprinting, no sharing of the presentation, but you can share the information.
Wonderful. Thought, Kyle okay, will that's... follow the rules. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I had to agree to that before they would send me this, so that's typically how things work. It's if you don't want the information, they won't send it to you. If you want it, there's sometimes restrictions, and at least I'm able to provide all the information, and I think that's the most important part. So what I'm going to do is run through this presentation slide by slide and walk everyone through how Porsche has been presenting the car for their internal meetings and for some selected media. Luckily, we were a part of that for this particular launch, and that's why I'm able to make this podcast for you. So you ready to strap in, Francie?
I am ready to go. I'm revving my engines. Let's do it.
So there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sections of this presentation. The first is just labeled keynote. It's my friend Mike, who runs Porsche Communications. He was in our range test video. He mentioned, I think he just does a short little introduction to the car, so I'll do that as well. There's the chassis systems, then drivetrain, charging performance, infotainment, and then body system. So those are the system lines. So Taycan, I'm just going to breeze through a lot of this stuff. I want to keep it somewhat nerdy, but I'm just going to read through it. They call it the Taycan success story. It's so Porsche. Everything has to be a success story. World premiere in 2019. It won World Luxury Car 2020 and World Performance Car of 2020. They've produced almost 150,000 Taycans up to this point. There's some photos of the factory, and now we're getting to the new Taycan. So they're sharing some slides of them testing in Death Valley in the winter, Sweden test tracks, and some other places. And the first real meaty slide of information comes on page 12, which is where we're getting into the percentage share of development cost. Now, developing a new vehicle is extremely expensive, hundreds of millions of dollars, sometimes more. And with a facelift, traditionally, companies have just gone through and changed some styling, maybe updated a part or two. But really, with the Taycan, and it's an entirely new electrical upgrade from the previous car. That's not to say the previous car is bad. It's actually probably the time to buy a previous car because they still have good range, incredible charging, great performance. And now you can buy them for easily, even a top spec for under $100,000, which is crazy. You can get a Turbo S for under $100,000. Pretty wild. And so, to take an already pretty much a benchmark in many category car to be, again, beating itself takes a lot of cost, and 25% of the development cost of the new car is in the performance category. So that is probably Porsche Active Ride, thermal management, a few other things. That's 25%. 29% of the cost is on efficiency. So this would be lightweighting, making sure the car has more range, potentially bigger battery in combination with performance, and just making the car much sip the juice much more. And we'll get into some more of those things. 11% went to infotainment, which I'm surprised because the infotainment's very similar to the outgoing car, just minor changes, but maybe some things in the back end. 3% of the cost went to comfort, so very little went to increasing comfort. 16% of the cost went to charging, but it charges like a monster. I would say it's more than 16% of value just in the charging. Mm-hmm. And the final 16% went to design, which I don't think they did anything because it looks pretty much the same as before. Minor changes, new headlights, new bumper. I almost think I like the pre-facelift car just slightly more, actually.
I thought it was interesting that you called this the benchmark, because if this is the benchmark for all EVs, I mean, they're way above the rest in terms of performance and as an electric vehicle, in terms of charging and range.
Yeah.
No?
Well, Lucid also is up there. Model S is up there. There's a lot of vehicles in this. You know, those are the holy trinity of electric cars right now, I've been saying, which is, you know, we did the race to Vegas with them, and we have to redo it again because everyone's updating their stuff. So it should be kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, I think it is a benchmark. The Taycan's amazing in many ways, but it's very expensive, especially when you option it. It got more expensive with the facelift. And, you know, if you look investment. At resale, you look at resale values, you know, it's not going to hold it very well because the J1.1 cars have just tanked. More so recently, maybe because of the facelift coming, but also because of the economy. Lucid's been lowering their prices. You can now buy a Lucid Air Pure for under $70,000. Amazing deal. Model S's are still smoking hot deal as well. So, you know, you're paying for a Porsche, but that's the thing. Porsche's never had an issue selling expensive cars.
No.
So that argument, you know, it is what it is. It's fine.
Yeah, no, this is definitely a premium offering. Like we said in the beginning, I have no expectation that this wouldn't be a high-priced car, and this is along the lines with Porsche, for sure.
So, yeah, the development cost, I just love that 25% of it went to increasing performance in an already great handling car. I actually think, yeah, I mean, we can do comparisons later on. What I really want to do is get the new spicy version of this car, whatever Turbo GT or whatever they're going to call it, against Lucid Air Sapphire, against Model S Plaid, against maybe even Rimac Navara or Rimac Navara. That would be an amazing comparison. But
quite the lineup.
Okay, next slide. Acceleration figures. So on the new Taycan rear drive, the acceleration from 0 to 100 kph on the standard car went from 5.4 seconds to 4.8 seconds. So a huge decrease in time. And on the Turbo S, it's gone from 2.8 seconds to 2.4 seconds. And I would say it feels faster than 2.4 seconds, which Porsche always underrates their stuff. To me, the new Turbo S felt very similar to my Model S Plaid. I almost cannot tell a difference between them. It still retains the two-speed transmission, which is crazy, in my opinion. We'll talk more about that. So not only has the acceleration time to 100 kph decreased, the range has increased by 35%. So at least in the WLTP cycle, it's gone from 503 kilometers to 678 kilometers. And we proved that. We did 465 miles in the new car, cruising slowly, but we were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. 678 kilometers is around 421 miles.
Right. Yep. And so I think we did 750 kilometers or 700 kilometers plus or minus, something like that.
Cool.
So then the new Turbo S, which is a less efficient package, has an additional motor, typically fatter, beefier tires as standard. That has a new range of 630 kilometers up from 467. So another big jump, 34% on that one. The power output has also increased. I think we all know that. So the new Taycan rear drive has gone from 240 kilowatt maximum to 300 kilowatt maximum. And output. Yep. So acceleration horsepower or, you know, power figure, I guess. Kilowatts the better way than horsepower, I think. I usually think in kilowatts. And I hope most of our audience listening to this does too, because that's the proper way to do an electric car's power. new Taycan Turbo S with launch control went from 560. Wait, am I reading this correctly? It was 560 kilowatts on J1.1. So on the previous one. And now it's 700 kilowatts. So it's a massive increase in power on the Turbo S. Huge. 140 kilowatts more, which is massive.
Yes.
So in terms of getting that 34, 35% more range, 14% of that comes from the battery. The rest come from other optimizations. So it says increased drivetrain efficiency, 5%. It's got a new rear motor. Optimized drive and recuperation strategy, 4%. Can do 400 kilowatt regen now, which is crazy.
Wow.
And whole vehicle optimization, mass, aerodynamics, and rolling resistance are baked into that at 11%. And that adds up to the 34% more range. But it's crazy. It's not like it's 34% coming from the battery. It's, yeah, they put a bigger battery in it, but then they optimize the rest of the car.
There's more that you have to do to really make that happen, I'd say.
Absolutely. And I wish I could share these slides with you because it really helps paint a good picture, but I just can't. The next slide is on the charging curves. They overlay. I just love how Porsche does out-spec style charging curves. They overlay the previous car versus the new car in terms of charging performance. And yeah, just crazy how much fatter the new curve is. You know, 320 kilowatt peak into the battery. But then if the car has a request for cooling, which it certainly will, or heating or some other things, it actually pulls over what the battery needs from the charger. So I think it's a 400 amp request, but it'll pull like 410, 408 amps from the charger to compensate for the load. So it's always keeping the battery getting the most amount that it can.
Interesting. Okay. Do you, are there any other EVs that are doing it quite like that? Do you know?
Yeah, Tesla does it. Sometimes like if I plug in my Model S and it's a tri-motor one, it can do, you know, waste heat from all three motors. It'll show like 262 kilowatts of charging into the plug or into the port, but the battery's only getting 250. So it will compensate for the extra.
Cool.
Okay. So then it's also less vehicle weight. So it went from 2,305 kilograms on the old turbo Taycan to 2,290 kilograms. So it's 15 kilograms lighter. Whether or not you'll see that, I don't know. But a lot of it actually comes from a new battery plate. So the high voltage battery, not only did it go from 83.7 kilowatt hours usable to 90, let me think about this, 87 kilowatt, what, no, it's 105, 97 usable. So it's 97 usable versus 83 usable before, and it lost 9 kilograms of weight. But a lot of that is actually due to the undershield plating is now a carbon fiber polymer thing versus like a steel plate or whatever it was before. So 9 kilograms came off the battery. They increased the weight of the car by 6.5 kilograms for increased product substance. The comfort brought them, again, up 8 kilograms of new features, maybe active ride, some other things. But then the new rear axle electric motor brought them back down 10 kilograms. And then just a blanket lightweight optimization, another 10.5 kilograms. So they added some weight in certain areas, took out weight in other areas. Overall, turbo to turbo, J11 and J12, 15 kilograms lighter.
About 33 pounds.
Yep. And then there's some...
Seem like a lot to me in the grand scheme of a car. Does it have the potential to make that much of a difference?
No, I think what the real impressive part about the weight savings is that the car is so much more car. It's got so much more battery. It's got so much more performance in terms of power. It's got so much more suspension complication, and it's lighter. Even if they kept it the same weight, it would have been incredibly impressive. But because they're nerds at Porsche, they had to go the other way. So that was cool.
Pretty cool.
And also, they probably learned a lot about where they could take some weight out of the previous car. And, you know, they probably overbuilt the first one, would be my guess, and then said, okay, well, we haven't had failure points in these areas. This is just a guess, and pulled some weight out. I spent a lot of time with the engineering team on a lot of this. So Kevin Geek and my friend Stefan, they're both part of the basically leading the Taycan program. We had a lot of drinks, a lot of talks, and I learned so much from them about all of this. And they really, like, if there was ever a car company designing for the out of spec hardcore user, it's these guys. They're like, we want our users to get to charging stations dead. We want them to ride the charging curve, unplug, rip. We want them to use preconditioning. We want them to use pre-chilling before the racetrack with the new pre-chill feature. They're like so awesome with like understanding that an enthusiast could buy an electric car and want to optimize it. So
fun. What a fun gig.
Okay, now we're getting into driving dynamics and assistance systems. So really, this is the you know, metal bits that have changed, and there's a lot. So there's new features for performance, driving dynamics, and extended efficiency. The first is adaptive air suspension with two-valve damper technology, starting with the J12 two-wheel drive, which means air suspension is standard, spring suspension is out for all models globally. And it also means you get the cool two valve, so compression and rebound adjustment as standard. So what's cool is, we'll go to the next screen, I wish I could share it, but the spider chart of the new two valve air suspension, the adaptive damper and everything as standard, is almost as good in every category as the previous top spec Porsche Dynamic Chassis Control suspension, which was the very expensive, you know, 48 volt thing. By the way, maybe this will be a slide, but there's no more 48 volt or 400 volt architecture on this car. It needed 48 volt for the old suspension stuff, and it needed 400 volt for AC compressor and some other things. Now you have just 12 volt for all your, you know, low voltage electronics, similar to almost every car except Cybertruck. And you have the 800 volt system architecture that runs off the battery. And even the new Porsche Active Ride suspension is an 800 volt suspension that directly hooks into the battery, which is crazy. So really eliminating a lot of just complexities here. And the thing was, before, they just couldn't find parts that were 800 volt. This was one of the first 800 volt electric cars on the market. And so having now time for the supplier base to catch up, for their engineering to work on some things, they were able to eliminate two whole voltage regions in the car, which saves a lot of weight and a lot of wiring.
Very cool. Is that going to be able to be adopted in more EVs into the future, do you think? Or is it really quite the expensive upgrade?
You mean 800 volt stuff?
Yes.
Right now, it's still pretty expensive.
Yeah.
And there's really not much benefit. I mean, there is an efficiency benefit. It's minor. There's a charging benefit for sure for high power charging. Right. And if you're going to build like a real crazy electric car, yeah, go 800 volt. But for the most part, I think that 400 volt region is acceptable for today. I think we will see, as charging becomes more of a priority and reducing current and heat loss, and the supplier base catches up with 800 volt. Once the cost, there's cost parity 400 to 800 volt, there's no reason not to go 800 volt at that point. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you get, air suspension, adaptive air suspension is standard. Active suspension system, Porsche Active Ride, is optional for full body control. And I've done a deep dive on that in my video, so you can check that out. All-wheel drive.
Performance enthusiasts like you.
Yeah, performance and comfort, actually. Like, because it raises the car up automatically when you open the door, and it can really soften the car. And yeah, it's basically a simulated sway bar. So it can essentially, the left and right wheels are never linked together. They're linked together through software. So if you're driving down a rutted road, but only the right side of the car is rutted, it doesn't affect the left side. So you get no head tossed or jostling in the vehicle. It completely separates it out. Yeah, exactly. So it's really, really nice. The Rivian can do the same thing, but it's just a central hydraulic pump versus individual side controls. Mm-hmm. So the Rivian, you have to go soft. Basically, they have to back off the dampers all the way in order to essentially disconnect them from each other. So the next bullet point is Porsche Active Ride. The next bullet point is all-wheel drive, including Porsche torque management based on new rear axle motor, including efficiency strategy. That just seems like they put a lot of words in one line. Maybe it was a translation thing that didn't come through properly.
Just a lot of buzzwords.
Yeah, and I think Porsche torque management is basically that they can control the wheel speed very quickly from the rear motor now. So, like, they put the basically the motor control unit and the traction control unit very close to each other so that they reduce the lag time. Tesla actually does longitudinal wheel speed control in motor, so there's very little lag. But this is near as makes no difference, very close to the ECU that controls wheel slip. And so when there is a wheel slip with that much power, with that much instant response, it can really dial it in to keep the proper amount of power rolling, so you don't overspin the tires or underspin the tires, so you get maximum acceleration. Reduction of rolling resistance, optimization of wheel air resistance, and residual braking torques. So they've optimized the calipers so they don't drag as much. They've reduced the rolling resistance of the tire with new tire and new wheel designs that are much more efficient. They have optimized maximum recuperation and recuperation strategy. Still no one-pedal driving, but the blending is better and also much more 400 kilowatts of regen and stronger brake cooling, just ducting now directly to the back of the brake discs, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know that when we went and ripped some BMWs out on the track, we had some cooling issues, basically overheating issues. And I know that, you know, people are going to, the whole goal here is to be able to rip your Porsche like you're supposed to, even though it's an EV. And does that relate to what you're speaking to here, the cooling?
We'll get to that actually later on. Okay. That was brake cooling. That would be drivetrain and powertrain cooling that you're curious about, which BMW is very bad at right now. Very bad at that. in all of their models. So the new standard adaptive air suspension, including PASM, this is what I think like 80% of Taycans are going to be optioned with. I think the Porsche Active Ride is really only for the hardcore enthusiast, someone like me who could appreciate those differences, someone who wants the car to raise up when you open the door, or tilt into corners. But ultimately, it's $7,300 for that option. I think the standard suspension is going to be like totally fine for most people. So you get two chamber air suspension with two valve damper, more comfort due to faster and more sensitive response in terms of reaction time. Rebound and compression damping can be adjusted independently. I already mentioned that. And significant increase in damping force potential. So they have, again, upgraded the standard air suspension to be almost as good as the old PASM, which is really cool. Or PDCC, I should say. The new Porsche Active Ride allows active force generation on every single wheel. Again, they have roughly 5 kilowatt electrohydraulic motors, permanent magnet, silicon carbide that can push high pressure hydraulic fluid into the damper instantly. And they actually regen a little bit, which is kind of cool. And they all feed off of the high voltage battery. So it all comes in and out. And there's basically a control unit. It's in the main video I showed you. Two motors together. It fits exactly where the old, basically 48-volt sway bar disconnect tightening thing for Porsche Dynamic Chassis Control sat. It sits right in the same place. They didn't need to re-engineer the packaging. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
And so Active Ride is the highest expansion level of chassis systems at Porsche. This is the most expensive one. It has wheel selective control and force generation, compensation of single wheel movements. That's what we were talking about with the head toss, and situational force generation for special situations. What that means is they have the ability to jam a wheel into the ground. So if you're like oversteering and you want to come straight, they can put a bunch of force on that outside rear tire and give it a ton of traction and pull the car straight. So not only are we dealing with drivetrain control logic for, you know, longitudinal control front versus rear motor, and also torque vectoring on the rear axle. Now it can place and push down the car in certain areas at the expense of moving the car's weight around, but it can do it. And that is so cool.
Yeah, that's incredible. There's so many small moving parts here that are coming together. Like you were talking about the team and how they really just take this. This is obviously a passion project.
Yeah. So what they have to show all of this, which this is what I really want to show to everyone, but it's a spider chart essentially of all of the characteristics that you want from a suspension system. It's handling performance, anti-pitch support, body roll, roll stabilization, insulation from an NVH standpoint, slow driving comfort, individual obstacles, shaking. So what is that? 8 different characteristics. And in all of those characteristics, the Porsche Active Ride is better than the other suspension systems, except for shaking, surprisingly, where it directly matches the standard adaptive air suspension.
Okay.
But everything else is just better.
Was this the $7,800 increase in the price or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So where it really shines compared to the other ones is in anti-pitch support, of course, because it can control the entire pitch. In handling performance, in roll stabilization, in installation, slow driving comfort, much more comfortable than the standard suspension. And in other areas, it's pretty comparable, such as shaking and individual obstacles and actually body roll as well. It seems to be very similar to the adaptive air suspension with PASM. You know, it's certainly better, but actually not as big of a gap as you would guess. Anyway, that's hard to explain that chart, but it's just like in the capabilities, it can just do more.
Yes.
And some of the things that it can do is it can do curve tilt where it leans into the corner. So Porsche calls it overcompensation of the rolling behavior. The vehicle is tilted into the curve to reduce lateral acceleration acting on the driver. So rather than getting pushed to the side, you almost get pushed down, which is kind of cool. There's active skyhook. So road unevenness is isolated by the active skyhook. Basically, picture like a hook holding the car and allowing the suspension to actually work. So you have very low body movement in roll, pitch, and lift directions, and maximum undisturbed driving comfort. I would agree. I've driven this system now. Actually, it wasn't in none of the test cars that I had on the range test, but I drove a Panamera, the new Panamera, with this. It was still a prototype. And I didn't like the overcompensation stuff, but I really liked everything else. Then there's also
comfort.
Go ahead. Yeah. So then there's grip control. This is where it is, you know, where I was talking about where it can force the weight of the vehicle in certain areas. And so you have roll moment distribution based on vertical, longitudinal, and lateral forces, optimal utilization of the grip potential. So again, really can get that contact patch down. Takes into account the all-wheel drive force distribution and the differential lock momentum. We've already discussed that, how it can work with all of the other systems. And the rear stability is directly adjustable. So again, if you're coming out of a corner too sideways, you want to straighten up, boom, it can jam that down and pull you straight. Pretty cool. Of course, it has dynamic leveling. So under braking and acceleration, it can compensate. It has a lower center of gravity and a reduction of wheel load transfer. It has camber increase vehicle via axle kinematics. Okay, so I guess what that means is as you stand it up on a corner, it essentially acts like it has more camber on it, which is good for getting more contact patch. And the spring rate increase due to air spring preload. Very nice. Entrance assistance, already mentioned, it can go from 55 millimeters up to 77 millimeters in about 1 second. And yeah, the helicopter function, I guess, is what they call the overcompensation of pitching functions. So that's all suspension. Let's talk. Wow. We're only 28 pages out of 100. You want to grab a chair yet?
Soon, probably, yes.
Okay. Let's talk wheels and tires. So we're starting here. There's a new range optimized tire on the range optimized wheel. It's actually slightly narrower than the other 21-inch wheels, but it's my favorite wheel in the car. And I've already done a whole guide on how to order and spec your Taycan on our Out of Spec Guide channel. And I'll do one for Macan coming up. But the 21-inch aero wheel is just a little bit narrower, looks great, but you still get the range. And then I think you just have a set of performance wheels and tires if you want to go rip.
Are you going to do that for every EV, a guide of how you should spec them out?
We can, if people are interested enough. They don't really perform that well, though.
Okay.
So summer tire range, it roll and aerodynamic drag optimized design for increased range, optimized for city and long distance driving. There's a sporty design and also optimized for high grip level in dry and wet weather conditions, and a clear focus on driving dynamics, cornering precision through increased grip level. Then there's also the So essentially they have three different versions, categories of summer tires. They have the summer tires range, which is the one optimized for long distance driving. They have summer tires, which are the sporty design and for a high grip level. And then there's the summer tires performance, which is a clear focus on driving dynamics and cornering precision through increased grip level. So three sections of summer tires, and then an all season tire that is designed for year round use in both winter and summer conditions. And then they also have OE winter tires for like here in Colorado, which we would need.
Would you opt for their options instead of like Martian wheels or Nokian tires?
Two different things. So the tire, So essentially Porsche does some of the best OE tires. I mean, every company has OE tires that are designed specifically for the compromises that the engineers are trying to get across in the vehicle. And if you agree with the compromises needed that the engineering does, you know, we're going through, it's going to be a much better suited tire for the car's overall package. So I always try and run an OE tire on our cars whenever we do our testing, because that is how the engine and the tire is the most important part of the vehicle and can provide the most drastic changes to the handling behavior and efficiency and everything. So yeah, I always recommend OE tires when your driving condition allows. But for example, here in wintertime, like a lot of OEs don't have winter tires for their cars. So we run Nokians, and we know that we are getting a performance decrease by putting on the Nokian winter tires. Some other cool things, the Mission E wheels have been redesigned from previous from J11 to J12, and you get 12 kilometers more on the WLTP cycle just for the wheel change. And the old Mission E wheels compared to the new 21-inch summer range wheel and tire package, the one that I like the most, gives you 40 kilometers more range in the WLTP cycle just from a wheel change. Pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah, that is cool. Small changes, big results.
Right. Now they have a whole slide on recuperation, which I love, regen. So previously you had 290 kilowatts of peak recuperation power, which I think was updated after launch because the communication that they shared was 265 kilowatt regen, but okay. Apparently it was 290. Now it's 400, and it happens somewhere around that 70 mile per hour range and above. You'll be able to get 400 kilowatts because it's 4.5 meters per second squared. And so you need a lot of deceleration force. And so anything below 70 miles per hour, it's probably not going to hit 400 before it blends friction brakes. But for racetrack recuperation, it can recuperate in ABS as well, which is really great. So if you do a full panic stop, it'll still regen the battery, which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about like the purpose of that, because 70 miles an hour, and then you need to brake pretty hard to get the payoff from the recuperation. So what is the point there?
It's for track performance. So on the road, you're still going to be using recuperation 99% of the time. It's just, if you want 4.5 meters per second squared, or you want 400 kilowatts, you know, you're going to be like in the windshield. So still most all of your braking is going to be done with recuperation.
Cool.
Then fun stuff, driver assistance systems, which was always lacking in Taycan. I still think it's not going to be great, but I got to try it out. Reversing camera is standard globally now. Hallelujah. Because sometimes when I drive them in Germany, they have no reversing camera. And I'm like, I can't see anything. And then you get a car with a reversing camera and you're still like, I kind of can't see anything because it's the worst reversing camera in history. And really? It still is. Yeah, it's still terrible. They have not adjusted it. My friend Kevin was like, I tried so hard to change the position and it was just like, we couldn't make it happen. I was like, what?
So it's the position of the camera, not necessarily the camera itself.
Yeah, it's like way too fisheye and it's off-centered. And so it's like weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Just apparently it was not, they tried to update it for this facelift. I'm like, you gave this thing 320 kilowatt charging, but you can't move the rear view camera or the
rear
camera. They're
saying, just go forward. Don't throw it in reverse. Just keep going forward.
Sure. But I it is a wide car with limited sight lines. It's kind of hard to park in tight areas, I think. I've driven them so much where I'm kind of used to them at this point, but I still like to have the 360 cam on them.
But did they have that? Or is that they have other cameras?
Yep, they have a full 360-degree option. So also lane change assist, which is just blind spot monitoring, is now has new functions. It has exit warning and exit maneuver warning. So if you are about to open the door and a car is coming up, it'll flash at you. Or if you're about to pull out in front of a car, it'll let you know, which is kind of cool. There's also a new package with surround view with active parking support. And that means you can like drive the car from the key or the phone. I think your phone. Forwards and backwards, like Tesla Summon. That stuff, whatever. But traffic jam assist is important. Hands-off traffic jam assist up to 60 kilometers an hour for up to 60 seconds. So it's not hands-off.
No, just a minute.
Just, you don't have to touch the wheel very often.
Inching through traffic, is that what they're saying?
Yeah, up to about 45 miles an hour. You just kind of touch it every 1 minute, which I think is fair, and it'll do the thing. There's no eye tracking or anything like that in this. And then it has, if you come to a stop, it now has a 60-second timer that it will restart. You don't have to like tell it, okay, let's go now. And I think that's great for stop and go traffic.
Yeah. Okay. And interesting.
There's also a new 3D view that will show you cars around you, up to five cars around you and three lanes.
So on the infotainment.
Yep. Okay. So now there's the drivetrain stuff. There's power up to 700 kilowatts, new push to pass function, which gives you an additional 70 kilowatts of power when you push the button. I'll double check that in the presentation, but that's what I'm remembering. And it's, you're like wide open throttle, you hit the button and boom, you get more. I think Kevin was saying when they did the lap record and whatever crazy ones coming, they used it 26 times on the Nürburgring. So it was and I'm like, why not just give it all the time then? Like, why do I got to hit a stupid button? He's like, well, this was the strategy, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, you're going to like just be hitting this button on corner exit all the time. I would have preferred it just gives it to you all the time, but that's okay.
boost button.
Yeah, it's a boost button. Yeah, like I guess BMW has it too on the steering wheel. I just don't, personally as a driver, I don't like the idea of a boost. I just want all the power all the time. And if it gets hot, just derate it, but whatever. So it's a segment leap in all driving performance categories. Acceleration is up to over half a second faster, 0 to 100 kph. Increased battery capacity, 105 kilowatt hour gross. Net is 97 kilowatt hours. We'll talk more about the battery. up to 35% increased range, already mentioned, and WLTP range up to 678 kilometers. So the new electric motor on the rear axle, something I want to talk about because I have not mentioned it much in my videos, but it's a new rear drive, new rear axle, still with the two speed. It's now actually 15 millimeters diameter less. Its length has decreased 18 millimeters. It has 80 kilowatts of more power. So it's 415 kilowatts just on the rear. It has 40 Newton meters more torque. It's gone from 550 to 590 Newton meters, and it weighs 10 kilograms less. It didn't seem that hard to optimize the old motor because that was like big and bulky. And even still today, I'm not sure this is the ultimate class leading tech. It's not permanent magnet. Oh, wait, no. It is permanent magnet, but it is not silicon carbide. It's just a silicon IGBT switch. They've increased the switching frequency, but it's not silicon carbide, which I think is interesting.
Why so?
Well, you would think for a high-end performance application, you'd want the best switching technology, which is silicon carbide today, but there's more new stuff cool coming down the line and for cooling as well. I don't know. I guess under hard throttle, it doesn't make much of a difference. It's more of an efficiency thing while cruising gently. But again, the car is so expensive, I would have expected it to have it. And the Porsche engineers were like, yeah, there would have been a benefit, but we have to balance cost. I'm like, just charge an extra $200 a car. I don't know. So, you know.
I mean, it sounds like they got this smaller with more power. Do you see how this silicon carbide would have impeded that?
Well, it would have helped more. They would have gotten more power. They would have had less cooling requirements and they would have had more efficiency. But more
cost. Must be some reasoning on their end, yes.
Probably some supplier cost thing. I don't know. And honestly, when you're going for full outright acceleration performance stuff, you're going to be having a lot of heat loss in the inverter regardless. But that was a question mark for me. So there's the newest generation of PSM e-motor. So it's a new magnet, optimized magnetic field, V-shaped magnets now. There's new rotor laminations. Everything's been upgraded. And the software optimization for higher power and inverter efficiency. They've improved the switching speed, like I mentioned. And the switching frequency adapted to e-machine speed. So they have variable switching speeds in the inverter, which makes sense. Then there's the new push-to-pass function. It gives you a 10-second increase of power. They are stealing it from Formula E. And it is activated through the button on the mode switch on the little dial on the steering wheel. And
didn't we just talk about that?
Yeah, it's just another slide that basically says the same thing.
Okay.
But then it also gives us some more details on this. So this is like a whole dedicated mini presentation on push-to-pass.
To the boost button, okay.
Yeah.
Or push-to-pass. So
a power delta of up to 70 kilowatts more. That was correct. And it includes a specific display, sound, and drive strategy. And it is a power meter. It just shows, this is just showing me what you actually see. So on launch control, on the previous car, you would get 100 kilowatts more power. So it was 460 kilowatt nominal, 100 kilowatt plus, 560 kilowatt with launch control on the old Turbo S. On the new Turbo S, the standard power output is 570 kilowatts of power. So 10 kilowatts more nominal than the old car in launch control. Then you hit the push to pass and you get 70 kilowatts of more power. But now that brings you to 640 kilowatts total. This is just on Turbo S. I'm sure there'll be a faster one coming. And then on the launch control with over boost, if you do a full launch, then it gives you 130 kilowatts more than the 570 nominal. And that's where you get your 700 kilowatts and greater than 1100 Newton meters of torque on boost performance. So,
yeah. Tons of power.
Also, the Taycan has increased in power, the base car by 60 kilowatts. We've already mentioned that. And the 0 to 60, maybe the power has not increased. Right. I got it. So the standard car now makes 300 kilowatts of power. The old standard car made 300 kilowatts of power, but that was only in launch control. So now you always get 300 kilowatts, but they have increased the torque significantly, and they have changed the shifting position to shift to second gear 10 kph earlier, which leads to a better 0 to 60 time. or 0 to 100 time. I don't think people are drag racing their standard Taycans. It doesn't matter, but there you go.
Why not?
Yeah, they're just not fast.
Compared to what?
Yeah, compared to like what you would expect a Porsche to feel like.
I think it sounds pretty fast. Yes.
Yeah, no, 300 kilowatts is just not enough. I think the Turbo S is the right power for this car. But I'm also jaded because I drive a Plaid every day. The new cell chemistry for higher energy density and performance in the same battery package is here. So we've gone from 93.4 kilowatt hours gross to 105 kilowatt hours gross.
Okay.
We're now pulling 400 amps from the charger versus 336 on the old car. So a 20% increase in charging current. Mm-hmm. The minimum temperature to start fast charging has decreased by 20 degrees Celsius. This is such a big deal. You used to need the battery to arrive at 35 degrees Celsius at a DC fast charger in order to get 270 kilowatts. Cool. Here, you can get there at 15 degrees and it'll take the full 300 plus kilowatt charging. And that is magical. Not only does that make the car more efficient on a road trip because it doesn't need to precondition as hot, you know, on your first leg, it also means you have a much larger temperature window as to which the vehicle can operate in under full power, which
really
is
really cool.
That about is magical.
59 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, this is really cool.
Yeah, that's chilly.
Yeah, that's chilly living with the VF8, you know, cold and slow charging speeds in general, but it's been chilly lately, especially in the mornings when we were on the road trip, and that definitely affected the charging performance. So to be able to bring that down, how did they do that?
Yeah, well, the new chemistry changes, they probably learned more about the cells. It doesn't actually say how they achieved that.
That's what I want to know. That's what I'm into, the battery chemistry.
Yeah, well, we'll get there. It's now went from 622 to 811 NMC equivalent. We'll double check that, but I think that's what it is. The max launch control current output used to be 860 amps, and now it's 1100 amps. And keep in mind, the new battery's slightly higher voltage than the old one. And the weight has decreased about 9 or 10 kilograms, and the energy density gross has increased 13%. So it's now 168.3 watt hours per kilogram versus 148.7 watt hours per kilogram on the early car. So all good stuff.
Very cool.
I believe that's at the pack level because there are a couple different ways to measure density.
Right.
Sarah Razavi is head of charging systems. I spent a lot of time with her. We had great conversations about charging globally and standards and stuff that I've done a whole deep dive episode on the charging performance of this car, which is just incredible. So I'll just breeze through this really quickly. But essentially, Volkswagen Group is honing in on a new communication strategy for charging, which is 10 to 80%. It used to be 5 to 80%. The 10 to 80% time of the old car was 21 and a half minutes. Now it's 18 minutes. So you're adding more energy in a less period of time. Those are the stated figures. I beat that by a lot when I was charging the car. So
really?
Yeah. So this is pretty conservative. It's more like 15 minutes, 10 to 80%, something like that. Nice. Then they've also decreased the charging handshake time from 49 seconds to 32 seconds. And that is on the Ionity network. So it will change, of course, by charging hardware. But on the vehicle side of things, it's gone from 21 seconds of communication down to 6. It's matching like Tesla. But then you have to wait for the charger to do the rest.
Talking fast. Okay. Super cool. Yeah,
so this is what I'm talking about. Like the Porsche guys are in the cannonball spirit and the out-of-spec way of ripping, which is like what other automaker is going to tell, I don't know, YouTubers about the communication time of when you plug in the car. And then I got off the Honda Prologue drive and they're like, no, you can't even go to a charging station.
Yeah, exactly. Totally different approach.
So in 10 minutes, you can add 45.2 kilowatt hours. And I think it'll actually do better than that because I added 20 kilowatt hours in 3 minutes and 58 seconds on my last test.
goodness gracious. That's incredible.
Yeah, and all of their testing at for all Volkswagen Group stuff is ambient temperature of 23 degrees Celsius with the car at that temperature, I believe. I believe this is without preconditioning, and that's how they have to communicate, which is why sometimes if you get the car optimized, it can beat their numbers. So Porsche is saying, 32 degrees Celsius, AC off. So you put climate off, you soak the car at 23C and then you plug it in, and that's how they do all of their stuff. And maybe we should do the same for our charging tests. That could be interesting. And sure. Then the recharge WLTP range in 10 minutes. This is very similar to like our 10% challenge, which the Porsche guys love that, by the way. So that was cool. J11, the early car, would do 225 kilometers in 10 minutes. Now it will do 315 kilometers in 10 minutes. So 100 kilometers more than before of driving distance after 10 minutes of charging, which is crazy.
Yes.
So that's going to be a big, I mean, right now the Taycan and the Lucid are both pretty much tied in our 10% challenge. And this is going to be crazier. They went further to talk about the road tripping ability, which is if you take the old car and the new car from Stuttgart to Barcelona, 1,247 kilometers, you will have two fewer charging stops and you will spend 40 minutes less charging. So you essentially will arrive there about 40 minutes to an hour earlier compared to the old car.
Cool. That's a big difference.
That's over 800 miles. So that's like the race to Vegas, which the Taycan already smoked everything except the Model S because of the, well, actually that was interesting. First time Taycan smoked everything. I forgot. The second time it was really close between Model S, Lucid, and Taycan.
Right.
So I think this is going to put them back in the lead.
Okay. Yeah, sounds like it. The
infrastructure can support it. Yep. More things about charging, which is there's a wider temperature range. You know, really the sweet spot is if you arrive at 15 degrees Celsius at 10% state of charge, that's where you get the biggest window to charge. And the car gives you the battery temperature, which is nice. There's a really cool chart. I wish I could show this. And it gives you basically the charging time from 10 to 80% starting at different temperatures. I love this. It's so cool.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I can't share the map, unfortunately.
No.
So there's a new onboard booster now, which is cool. So this is the combined booster converter, the CBC, which is basically taking out a few different components from before. So in the previous car, it was the high voltage booster when you would plug it into a supercharger or something that couldn't, a charger that couldn't do 800 volts. It would do 400 to 800 volt. That is still in there in this car, but completely optimized. And you used to have a DC to DC in the car that would literally go from 800 volt to the battery, 400 volt for HVAC, 48 volt for suspension, and 12 volt. We already mentioned this. Now you only have inside this box, it's gone from 360 amps while charging to 420 amps while charging. Again, the battery only gets 400 amps, but there's 20 amps of headroom to take power in from the charger. And it's also good because when you're doing, at like a supercharger magic dock station, you'll be able to get 420 amps instead of 360 amps on the old car. So you'll charge much faster on the 400 volt chargers. Then, let's see, traction network, distributed charging station, pre-charging contactor control. So the PDU has been upgraded, some other things. I've already shown everyone the battery indications in the main video, but like where it tells you temperature and how to get the car in the window for max charging. There's a little gray bar that you need to get the battery temperature into. And that if you're in that temperature, you will have greater than 150 kilowatt charging, which is great.
Nice.
It will also show up, your charging power will show up in green when your car is getting everything you want. And it will show up in gray when the charger is limiting you. And it will show you what the car wants versus what the charger is giving you. So you can blame.
No way.
Yeah, which is great. I think that's awesome.
Blame the right party. Okay, cool. You can
blame the right party. And they Porsche said the charging networks were not happy about that one.
Oh, really? More information for consumers?
Yeah, because now they can blame the car or the charger.
Okay. But so if the car starts asking for less, it'll still be green.
Yep.
You know, yeah.
It could show 3 kilowatts at 99% and be green, as an example.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yep. That's so the charging planner has been improved. So it's now 3 times faster than the early car, which was already, it was pretty slow, the route planning, I will say, but it was pretty accurate and it will update in real time. It's still not as fast as Macan. So the infotainment system uses the regular Porsche PCM stuff, not the Android based stuff, which the Macan is much more advanced. Apparently the J1 platform just could not accept the new infotainment system. And this is what you get with legacy car manufacturers with multiple platforms.
So does that explain their investment here that you were kind of wondering about?
Yeah, like I didn't really see the benefit of the infotainment system compared to the previous car.
But if they could
maybe slightly snappier.
Adopt it into this platform.
Yeah, they couldn't. So that would have been great to see. But it just was not possible, apparently. So you get more charging stop information, and you can set the arrival state of charge at a charger versus your destination, I think, down to 2 or 3%, which is great. So real, real good things, and I've shown a lot of that. You also have a improved Porsche app with the charging planner built in the app, and then you can send it to the car. And so especially in Germany, what will happen sometimes is like the car will plan a route, and then you're like, you know, a GT3 comes up next to you and you got to like rip to like show them that what the Taycan can do. And then it's right. Like, oh crap, I got to charge earlier. And it will recalculate all that in real time. And it will adjust the preconditioning automatically. It gets the battery with the, you know, basically the coldest temperature needed to give you the longest charging session, but making sure you get the fastest charge. Most preconditioning is cooling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's, some little things on the interior, the wireless charging with 15 watts, which doesn't seem like much, but it has active cooling for wireless charging, which is nice. The Cayenne has that too, so your phone doesn't overheat, increasing efficiency. Sure. Mm-hmm. Love that. I've shown everyone the new gauges. I've shown what they all look like, how the drive modes works. There's a new Sport Chrono circuit mode with track endurance mode that pre-chills the battery pack. The car needs to be 65% or above to activate pre-chilling. And it will pre-chill until the battery reaches 55%. This is annoying. I just want it to pre-chill whenever. Let me be in control of when the car runs max cooling. It's really needed for the higher state of charge regions because that's where you make most of your power. And the idea is, of course, you're going to put the car on a fast charger in between track laps with more tracks getting charging now. You can pre-chill it while it's charging so you get the longest track session out there without overheating. I think that's a great, great feature. Tesla has it similar with track mode and things like that. There's a new Apple CarPlay with Apple CarPlay Plus where you can like set your climate control and everything in through CarPlay. We won't go into that too much. There's three, I've already mentioned this in the video, but there's the Taycan Sedan, Cross Turismo, and Sport Turismo. The US is not getting the Sport Turismo. More things that are not so technical in terms of design.
Wait, I have a question about the Apple CarPlay Plus. So it seems like it's more integrated into the system within the EV. And preconditioning is something that's important, right? If you navigate using Apple CarPlay, will the car precondition? Or do you have to use the...
Yes, you have to use the built-in one at the moment.
Yes.
Okay. A big limitation, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, and I actually am not a fan of manual preconditioning, by the way. But we'll do a podcast topic about that. Sure. I'm a fan of certain things about it, but not everything about it. Okay, here's the nerd stuff on the cooling package.
Burr.
Okay, so the increased total cooling power has gone from 9 kilowatts to 12 kilowatts of cooling power. A big jump. Yeah. That means that it can cool the battery before it was 0.8 degrees Celsius every minute of cooling. Now it's 1.3 degrees Celsius per minute of cooling.
Mm-hmm.
So a significant increase in cooling power, which is great. But certainly, even more of an increase is the heating power. So now they only use the heat pump for interior heating. There's no resistive heating for the cabin. They have a resistive heater and the heat pump that can jam heat into the battery if they need it. But for all cabin, it's all heat pump, which is great.
Okay.
There's more heating power. Before it was a 7 kilowatt heater. Now it is a 17 kilowatt heater, which means you can double the speed that you're heating up the battery. It went from 0.4 degrees Celsius per minute to 0.8 degrees Celsius per minute. So that means that on that initial drive, as soon as you turn the car on, the heating will start. And before in the other car, you had to wait some time for it to start heating. Now it's boom, instant warming. You put in a charger, you know, whatever, the battery's going to heat itself up. That's awesome. And it will also do heat scavenging. So it will use excess heat for cabin heating without the heat pump and high voltage heater. So if the battery's hot and let's say it's trying to cool for the next charger and it's winter time, it'll scavenge the heat from the motors, from the battery into the cabin. So really good thermal concept here.
Mm-hmm. Optimization.
There's, new headlights with 32,000 pixels in them, over 600 meters of high beam range. When you put them to range mode, they'll derate. When you go faster, they'll get brighter. The US has very limited functionality of the headlights, but the matrix function looks really cool. Also gives you the magic carpet thing in front of the car where it, like, you know, shows directions and lights up. You know, if you put in a lane change, it'll light up the right lane so that you can see even where you're going. Cool. Even in construction zones, it will follow the cones and say, here's where you need to go with the headlights. But none of this is legal in the US, so we can't do that.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're kind of getting close to most of the end of the stuff, but essentially the taglines for the car are higher, further, faster. And that gives some highlights that I've already mentioned to you. They talk about embargoes and other things. And there's some more information here. I have not seen any of these ones, so I'm just going to scroll through this and let you guys know what I find. There's an optimization of brake pads and the reduction of residual braking torques. We already mentioned that. That gives you 4 kilometers of more range in the WLTP cycle. Reduction in rolling resistance gives you 30 kilometers of more range just from rolling resistance. Stronger cooling of the brakes, better performance. I've already mentioned that. There's just some cutouts. More things on the active ride with one chamber air suspension, 2-valve damper with the pump unit versus the J11, which had PASM and adaptive air suspension, which was a 3-chamber air suspension with 1-valve damper and PDCC Sport. Everything's in German now. I don't understand. The headlights, charging power. Yeah, I'm just making sure I don't miss anything.
You're not fluent yet?
I can read some of the words and understand roughly what they're talking about, but I can never do it. But anyway, there we go. So they actually have an RFID versus plug-in charge time comparison for charging, which is kind of cool.
Oh,
so,
yeah, that is cool.
But it's all charged, but that's everything. So that's an hour deep dive roughly on the new Porsche Taycan, the technical presentations that they shared with me. I could talk about this car for a week straight. It's great to have access to the engineers to learn about it. It's a car that's very close to my heart. I've done a lot with it. I will continue to do a lot with it. It's, I would say, a pivotal car, Porsche's first battery electric vehicle. And it's already, you know, even the old car is beating most new EVs today. And it's like 5 years old or something. And, you know, really, we're getting into that Lucid Model S Taycan territory up here. And we're just going to see who's pushing, what comes next. Can't wait. Right now, I'd say the Model S is probably the weakest of the three as an overall package. They have the charging network, but and probably the better driver assistance function. But I can say that as a Model S owner, I would say, you know, Lucid Sapphire, much more expensive. Taycan Turbo S, much more expensive, but also operating in certain areas, like way above the Model S and chassis performance and some other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I don't know. Porsche seems to be doing their own amazing thing. And it's really cool to see. And it'll be interesting to see how and if these kind of technologies and, you know, basically strategies are able to be implemented in other brands and other models, just knowing the sheer magnitude of the investment that goes into making the Taycan what it is today. So I can tell that you're a fan. And
yeah, absolutely. I'm not of everything, though. I think that in terms of space efficiency, it's like almost the same dimensions of the Lucid, but then there's no room in the Taycan. So there's still things that they need to work on. Mm-hmm. But overall, for just, it's got to be my personal, if I just had to have one car, it would either be Rivian R1T or a Cross Turismo.
Really? All right.
Yeah, they both kind of do everything.
Pretty good cars. Yeah, that'd be the perfect two-car lineup.
Yeah, that would be a good two-car solution for sure.
Well, yeah, big deep dive. Lots of details. Hopefully these nerdy details were enjoyable for those of you who do want to know about them. That's a lot to learn. I really do like the openness and how excited the engineers are to speak with you as well, Kyle. I think that is a really fun thing for you to experience, especially compared to, you know, other automakers out there who maybe aren't diving into all of this so much. So to be able to get a peek into that. So thank you for the hour-long lesson in the Porsche Taycan facelift. Pretty cool. Pretty impressive. Would love to sit in one soon.
Yeah, you got to drive one at some point. Like, have you never driven a Taycan?
I've never driven a Porsche.
What? Oh, we got to change that.
Mm-hmm. We do. From VF8 to Porsche. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the what?
That would be a funny series.
That would. Just keep shooting up, just exponentially. Yeah. What would come next?
You'd have to get into supercar territory.
Supercar?
Yeah, you'd have to go crazy. Like, if you wanted to continue up, you know, you would go into, you know, Pagani, Bugatti, Area, Rimat, that type of stuff. Just crazy experiences.
It would be crazy. Oh, well, that would be so different. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Out of Spec podcast. Hope you enjoyed this deep dive into the land of Porsche. Let us know what questions you have about any of the aspects. Hopefully, Kyle can jump over and fill in any of the blanks.
Yeah, if there's any questions, by the way, mm-hmm. for like the nerd Porsche people, because there's like a group of a few hundred Taycan owners that are like us that want to know everything, you know, put those in the comments and I can ask the engineers about it. So if there's anything that's we don't know, we can get the info. They're very open.
Look around. Upvote your favorite question if you haven't thought of one yourself about that you're curious about. And Kyle, we'll send Kyle on a scavenger hunt for the clues and the answers. We will see you next time on the next Out of Spec podcast. Have a rip-roaring rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
The secret to visibly firmer, summer-ready skin is here. Osea's number one best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and transform dull, dry skin to silky, soft, and unbelievably glowing. Rich yet never greasy, Andaria Algae Body Oil is formulated with sustainably sourced seaweed to help replenish the skin's moisture barrier and 7 nourishing active botanical oils for results you can see and feel all over. The best part? Its signature scent. A blend of freshly squeezed grapefruit, cypress, and mango mandarin transports you to sun-kissed summer days. This all-natural scent is unforgettable. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com code GLOW.